Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:31 PM, that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is March 23rd. We've had a lot of action over the weekend again, and there's a lot to talk about. But what I thought I would kick off with today is this graphic comparing cyclicals with defensives, because generally speaking, defensive sectors tend to outperform heading into a recession. And it's inevitable that we're about to head into a recession. The yield curve spread has spiked above 50 basis points following an inversion. That's an urgent signal that we are heading into a recession. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in a moment. But there have been occasions when defensives have outperformed by more, or cyclicals by more, over the course of the last 25 years. But we know that we're getting into pretty rarefied territory, and particularly given the extent of the advance that we've seen. So I think that's one of the more important points. The other thing that I think is less appreciated is that the daily increase in new coronavirus cases is declining. The rate of advance is declining. It does not mean that the number of new cases has stopped rising, but rather that the percentage gain, the growth in the gain of new cases, has started to decline. That phenomenon corresponded with the trough in markets during the SARS outbreak. So that's obviously something that people are paying attention to. It's true in Switzerland, the UK, Belgium, Spain, Germany, the Netherlands, Austria, France, and Italy. So the lockdowns are having an effect. They are limiting the pace with which new cases are turning up. So that's a positive. And it's a victory of sorts for the governments of those countries. So that is something that we do need to pay attention to. What, of course, we need to see, and the only way that lockdowns are going to be removed, is that the healthcare systems of all countries are in a position where they can, in fact, treat people as they turn up at hospital. And the only way to do that is to limit the numbers, and the only way to limit the numbers is either to get in control of the exponential growth, which is to knock it back by very strict social distancing, testing, and isolation, or we come up with a cure. Well, the cure isn't there yet, but one thing that's been priced into markets over the course of the last few weeks is really to assume that we're going to have waves of infections similar to what we had with the Spanish flu. But I think that that is less likely to occur on this occasion, simply because we're a more technologically advanced society, dealing with something that we haven't had to deal with before, but nonetheless, we have the tools with which to come up with a solution, which is not something that they had over 100 years ago. So there are massive efforts underway to develop artificial intelligence solutions. Supercomputers have come up with upwards of 70 different existing drugs that could potentially be efficacious against the coronavirus. So obviously that's very positive. Obviously they'll have to be tested. That's going to take a little bit of time. There are drugs in the market right now which are very broadly helping to moderate some of the most severe symptoms. And again, that is by far the most important aspect, that one of the reasons why there is a high mortality rate is not because of the inevitable decline of people's ability to deal with it, but rather the inability of healthcare resources to keep pace with the number of people requiring them. So Gilead's remdesivir is the drug that is most frequently being talked about, and the share continues to hold the breakout from a year-long base formation. Then we have the fact that Moderna, they are looking really quite confident at the data coming out of their vaccine, and they were talking today about the potential that they could have it in healthcare workers by the fall. And That's less than 6 months from now. So if healthcare workers can be immunized against the coronavirus, well then that is going to further aid the ability of the healthcare sector to care for people as they become infected. And within 6 months after that, there would be a broadly available vaccine for the broader population. Well, that pretty much ensures us against the potential that there is going to be a second wave, potentially in the fall or in the winter, or potentially even in 2021. So the potential here is that we're looking at a 6 month phenomenon rather than a 24 month phenomenon. And that is something that has not yet been priced into markets. So I think that's something we do need to pay attention to. But one of the problems that the stock market has right now is that banks are inhibited from lending. The regional banks index in the US has moved to a new low. It was off the low intraday, but it's still falling in a very aggressive manner. And when we look at that on a log scale chart, just to emphasize the size of the percentage moves, going from 100 at the beginning of March to 55 is an incredibly aggressive pullback, and it unwinds a very significant share of the advances that have been put in. Well, in fact, it unwinds all of the prior 8 years of advances. So we're not yet at the kind of disastrous situation for the regional banks that we had back in 2008, but the one problem that a lot of regional banks and indeed the bigger banks have is that companies have been drawing down on their revolver loans, and banks are contractually obligated to fulfill those loans, so they have to extend credit. But that means they don't have any credit for anything else. And that means that anyone who wants to go to the bank for a loan or to be extended additional credit, they're going to be refused. Anyone who wants to take out a mortgage to buy commercial property is going to be refused. And that they simply don't have a choice in the matter because they have already become overextended. One thing that we have certainly learned over, and I think it is perhaps most accurate to say relearned, is that scalpers or high-frequency traders do not act as market makers in a crash. Going all the way back to the flash crash of 2010, that was the clearest evidence we had that these companies do not act as market makers when volatility spikes. And volatility has most definitely spiked. The VIX index has pulled back in here today, but it's still around 60. Now, it's important to highlight that peaks in the VIX correspond with lows in the stock market. There is the potential here that we are in the bottoming phase. And if we are approaching the peak in the infection rate for the virus in Europe, then it is reasonable to assume that, considering the lag in infections that we've seen in the UK and in the USA, that similar decline in the growth rate of new infections is probably a month out for the UK and the USA. So we can see that there is a logical progression. That doesn't mean that there aren't going to be more deaths or that there aren't going to be more cases, but that we can see light at the end of the tunnel. That's potentially the most important point. Well, certainly the fact that you've had a massive unwinding of leverage in macro hedge funds, that has contributed to extraordinary volatility. But one thing that we did see today is that yields have started to come down at the same time that equities have also been under pressure. So bonds and equities are now moving in opposite directions. We've had some strength, in other words, coming through in government bond prices. So that does suggest that the deleveraging phase for macro hedge funds has now taken place. And that is removing a source of supply from the market. So that's one of the most important points. The continued low liquidity situation in the banking sector is something that we do need to pay attention to. The fact that there is likely to be a spike in defaults is certainly something that needs to be paid attention to. The fact that the Federal Reserve has now announced that they are going to buy corporate bonds has put some support under the corporate bond or the investment grade ETF. The fact that they have not extended that same courtesy to the high yield sector is putting additional downward pressure on the high yield sector. One thing we know is that the Japanese Central Bank and the Swiss Central Bank both buy ETFs of equities. It's not at all beyond the bounds of possibility that if the liquidity situation in the equity market does not improve, then the Federal Reserve will start buying equity ETFs. Now, what I thought was particularly interesting is that when we look at the Dividend Aristocrats, they have pulled back in an extraordinarily violent manner. And considering that it was a reasonably consistent advance all the way up from when this ETF began in 2013 until the peak quite recently, they have unwound approximately 5 years of advances. Now, one thing that I think is rather interesting is if we look at some of the household name Dividend Aristocrats. McDonald's has currently got a dividend yield of about 3.5%, and every other time in the last decade it has got to 3.5%, it has acted as a support for the share. When we look at PepsiCo, then we can see that it is now yielding 3.63%. Every time it had got to 3.5% previously, it has then acted as a support. When we think about the very significant pullback that we've seen on Coca-Cola, then its yield is now at approximately 4.28. Now, there have been occasions going all the way back to 1980 when it did have a higher yield, around 7%. But the reality is, and we have to ask ourselves the very simple question, are people really going to stop going to McDonald's? Are they going to stop eating snack foods from Pepsi? In fact, one thing that has been recommended that people have in their homes is Gatorade, because of the fact that you can drink it and it will replace a lot of the nutrients your body requires to fight the virus, and that's produced by Pepsi. Are people going to stop drinking Coca-Cola because of this environment? Then, of course, we have the incredible contraction that we've had in the oil market. And one of the points I remember David talking about from all the way back in the 1980s was that the market may have broken out in 1980, but valuations did not bottom until 1982. And that is something that we see in the yield for ExxonMobil. So we did have this very long-ranging phase in the Dow Jones. We had the breakout occurring in the valuations bottomed in 1982, and we had the breakout occurring subsequently. Now, that was back when ExxonMobil yielded 10%, and currently it yields 11%. We've had an incredibly accelerated decline. The company is not on the need for additional stimulus, and also their fiscal situation just cannot tolerate oil prices at these levels. ExxonMobil has gone from 70 to 30 in the space of about 10 weeks. And back in 2014, it was trading at $100. Well, Brent crude has not demonstrated that we're at a low just yet, but some of these dividend paying companies are back at really rather impressive levels. And oil prices at $27 are at lows that have not been seen in years. So there is a lot of supply that is about to be shut in. And I think that's one of the most important points, that we have got very exaggerated levels on the vast majority of assets right now. But the macro data is improving. Monetary policy beats most other factors most of the time, and it is now being supplemented by fiscal stimulus. And the fiscal stimulus coming through from the USA, from the Eurozone, China, other developed nations, and then what we're seeing from the emerging markets is now in excess of what was announced in 2009. It's also worth remembering that the big issues that had led to that stimulus in 2009 had occurred a year earlier. So this is a very rapid response in terms of fiscal stimulus. So we're getting monetary and fiscal stimulus simultaneously on a global basis. And there is a clear ambition of the monetary and fiscal authorities to engage in reflation. So now we have government bonds that are likely to continue to represent a contraction in yields. That's, I think, one of the most the clearest bullish phenomenons for equities. The fact that we have got an environment where equities now yield almost 200 basis points more than government bonds is a situation that does not have an historical comparison. One of the reasons why people buy bonds is for the stability, and they're just not getting that right now. They're not getting the yield, and they're not getting the lack of volatility. The MOVE index has shot higher over the last while, and it still remains really quite elevated, although I think that we do have potential for that elevated condition to moderate. But when we look at the potential for equities to throw off a yield, then we've seen a very significant sell-off. One that really caught my attention was Cisco. They are food suppliers for the vast majority of restaurants and hotels. They also provide linens for hotels and cooking utensils, silverware, and it has collapsed over the course of the last couple of months and unwound 7 years of advances in the process. Now, we have to at least consider that people are going to be going back to restaurants, and people are going to start staying in hotels again. It's just that we're probably not going to see that over the course of the next quarter. But a lot of bad news has already been priced in. It's a dividend aristocrat, and when we look at the history of its yield, well, it has in the past yielded 4%, and that was back in 2008, and now it yields more than that. So we've had a valuation contraction and a rising dividend yield. This is, in a very short period of time, what we would anticipate occurring during a period of secular stagnation. And that pricing in of secular stagnation in such an incredibly short period of time suggests that we're at a very clear bearish peak. Now the big question is, how long is the base formation completion, or base formation development and eventual completion, going to take? One of the things that we could anticipate following an accelerated decline, which is exactly what we've had, is that there's going to be a short, sharp rally. And it will be larger and more powerful than anything we've seen over the course of the last 4 or 5 months. Subsequently, we get a period of consolidation. And if it is a bottom, then we are likely to see that the lows hold. So I think we're probably close to lows for the consumer sector, for the leisure sector, but maybe not yet for the banking sector. We don't yet know about the number of bankruptcies that there are going to be, the number of delinquencies that are going to be. There are obviously going to be serious ramifications for people making their mortgage payments. The credit quality of consumers is likely to contract. There are going to be a significant uptick in the number of unemployed people. And that is going to take a toll. So obviously that is something that we need to give some due consideration to, that there is likely to be a period of consolidation where valuations come up against the lack of revenue in a short period of time. The determining factor will, of course, be the likelihood of a near-term end, as in, and by near-term I think 3 months to 6 months is perhaps the most benign scenario. If investors are willing to look beyond 6 months, then we've had a lot of valuation contraction already. So there is obviously then the scope that we are coming towards the lows in the energy price. We've already seen significant lows in anything that's related to the consumer. But then I think it's also worth considering that the semiconductors index has been bouncing for in here today. And obviously we've also had a very pronounced decline. Going from 2000 to 1300 is a significant pullback. Of course, what it also suggests is that there is the potential for a rebound back towards the 200-day moving average. The big question that has not been answered is whether we're at the end of a secular bull market or whether this is a big black swan event that leads to a readjustment. That is it the kind of event that we had in 1987 that just represented a milestone in the middle of a big secular bull market, or is this the end of a secular bull market? That is something that we can't really answer just yet, because we haven't seen a bounce. We haven't seen whether those lows are in fact going to hold, where resistance is ultimately going to come through. But considering the quantity of money that is being thrown at this problem, then there is the clear potential that we're going to get a rebound, that we're going to see economic activity starting to pick back up again. Then, obviously, there is going to be the question of the sustainability of the debt. And what is that going to mean in terms of future taxation, but also the purchasing power of currencies? Because all of the efforts underway to support the economy are coming at the expense of the purchasing power of currencies. And gold was up nearly $54 in here today, bouncing from the region of the 200-day moving average, and it still looks like a recovery scenario. Silver prices have also bounced in here, and they do look increasingly likely that we're going to see a rebound in here, and up almost a dollar in here today. I do remember trading silver back in the period ahead of the financial crisis, and any time it rallied a dollar was usually a sign that we had seen a meaningful bottom. Any time it pulled back by a dollar was also a time when it was generally a buy. Of course, we had much larger pullbacks than a dollar last week, but it does look like we are close to a low for the precious metals, and we have seen the low in the gold price. Platinum prices are also firming from above the $600 area. The gold shares have not been immune from a significant pullback and were not able to hold on to their advance in here today. I do think it's one of the sectors least likely to be shut down as a result of a lockdown, considering the remote location of the vast majority of mining operations. But it's going to require some faith on behalf of stock market investors to just hold with it, because we are likely to see that the gold miners are going to be the sector that does best in the upcoming earnings season. And the setback that we've had is, I think, a buying opportunity, not least because oil prices have come down and that reduces the cost of mining. So gold shares are likely to eventually play catch up with gold, although they are subject to a great deal of volatility in the short term. But the bigger picture is that gold offers a hedge against the worst inclinations of government. Regardless of how well-intentioned they are, the reality is that massive fiscal and monetary stimulus is tantamount to devaluing currencies. That's, I think, also part of the reason why Bitcoin has been reasonably steady in here. It's rebounded from 4,000 to over 6,000 in the course of the last couple of weeks. It's unwinding, it's overextension relative to the trend mean. Certainly we know that it is an extraordinarily volatile asset, but we are coming up towards a halving, and that generally has been something that bolsters the limited supply argument for the asset. So I think that is one of the more interesting phenomenon, that we're getting gold and Bitcoin now demonstrating support coming through at exactly the same time that governments are leaning on the purchasing power of their currencies. The euro was relatively unchanged in here today. The ECB embarking on a quantitative easing. Australia, for the first time, embarking on quantitative easing. The Australian or the ASX 200 was also in negative territory in here today, but again, this is a phenomenally swift pullback. Even if it were to unwind the overextension relative to the trend mean, it would be more than a 2,000 point rally. So we are getting the kinds of overextensions relative to the trend mean on a number of global indices that are larger than we saw back in 2008. One thing I do remember about writing in 2008 was looking at the overextension relative to the trend mean on the S&P 500 and recording that it hadn't been that wide since the Great Depression. Well, looking at the performance of the Australian market, we are not that far away from the kind of overextension that we've had during 2008. It's pricing in an incredible amount of bad news. Well, obviously the Chinese economy is still reeling, and the continuous commodity index is still under pressure, but Chinese industrial production is starting to get better. The continuous commodity index was in positive territory in here today, and Asia is likely to come out of this viral scare before other regions because it went into it first. So what happens in Asia is probably going to give us as much information as we need about what the trajectory of the recovery phase is likely to be, but also that we are very oversold, and even in a bear market scenario, we're due a bounce. The lack of uptrend consistency, the declines that we've seen, certainly are something that are going to act as difficult rationales for the majority of investors, but certainly the quantity of money that is getting thrown at this problem suggests that we are close to at least a near-term low. How well those lows hold will dictate whether it's a medium-term low. And with that, I'll leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.